Welcome to The Hawkins Report, a Stranger Things podcast presented to you by LSG Media. Chapter 3, Jessica, the case of the missing lifeguard coming in hot off of my first and only watch, your second watch in, I don't know, 2 years. But here we are. And, you know, it's funny. We're doing this a little bit different than we did last time. I'm not watching the episode twice. I'm watching it once, and we're literally going right to the mics after I watch it. So it's funny because this season is almost becoming like an instant take about how I feel about it. But I'm going to tell you, coming right out of the gate, I think this episode overall is excellent. I think this is a really good episode of TV. I thought it was super compelling. I liked it was visually striking. There was a lot of nice visual stuff in this episode. I love the visual stuff with Elle and the way she sort of astral walks to get this information, dancing between the two worlds, so to speak, to get her insight. But I quickly jotted down a couple of notes, just obviously things that we should talk about. But how are you feeling on your first watch after seeing this?
It's my second watch.
I know, but I'm saying if you can, without the knowledge of the rest of the series.
It's hard because like when I watched this originally, I binged it. So I don't necessarily it's hard for me to distinguish episode by episode. I agree that overall, I think this is a pretty good episode. And I think the stuff that we get from all of the characters is pretty impactful. I'm sure there'll be a couple things I'll complain about because there always are.
Sure.
But overall, it's like... It's
complain
it's
or discuss?
Done. Discuss.
Well, here's what I do know after watching this episode: that men and boys are largely incompetent, and the girls are going to save the day, which is great news. So, if I start fucking up and you want to bail me out and rescue the podcast, please do, because I don't want to be like every other dude in this episode. That's my only complaint. Is we get it, girl power. You guys are awesome. You guys kick ass.
I think there are some ways in which I like that they do this with, like, you know...
I'm being a wise ass.
No, but there is a bit of a problem in some of the stuff that they do.
Like, everyone...
Some of it is fine.
Can I just say something? Everyone at the newspaper is a prick.
Yeah,
every fucking guy. Every dude there is an asshole. And then Jonathan's a giant pussy now. The boys are doing nothing except farting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Hopper... has to kind of be convinced by Joyce to do stuff. Billy's a villain.
Billy's the best part of the show right now.
Billy, yeah, I know.
No, just kidding. He's good, though. He's entertaining for sure. Oh,
yeah, that's
character.
We'll talk about. I think we'll save that for the last thing we talk about. But no, I am. If it wasn't so obvious to me watching it now, maybe I'm being overly sensitive. Maybe I'm completely aware of the time we live in, April 2020. I'm very familiar with the way the entertainment business sort of sticks its finger in the air and finds out which ways the wind is blowing culturally, and it's sent to ride that wave. I don't think, in my experience, Hollywood and or storytellers nowadays rarely do anything brave. They're not making change. They're just riding the winds of change. And that's fine, whatever, like it is, but it just, and I'm fully willing to admit maybe my own awareness to it is my own sensitivity to it and my own bias towards it. I'm willing to entertain that, but it just seems so obvious to me that was kind of the case, which is unfortunate, but whatever, it is what it is. It doesn't ruin the episode for me. There's so much to like about this episode and amazing shit. That's not to say I don't love the stuff between Elle and Max. I think it's probably, outside of that final scene with Billy and the lifeguard's parents, it's probably the most awesome shit this whole episode. There's a lot I want to talk about with Elle and Max that I love.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I really thought this was an entertaining piece of television. And there's plenty I like about it, my baggage aside.
I think the problem is there's just a little bit too much of like the men being stupid and the women doing well. Like Elle has kind of always been our hero.
For sure.
So that's okay. A little too over the top with the boys and their behavior as far as when she's spying on them. Their stuff with Will, like that stuff, that coming to a head, I liked the way they did that.
Me too.
I have a lot of problems with Hopper.
Really?
Yes.
So
I continue to this season thus far.
I don't mind the scene. So talk to me about the specific things you didn't like.
I find that the show is continuing to develop Hopper in a way that I think is unrealistic and not him.
Because he's
and
an
too
oafish,
over the top.
He's an oafish dumb man.
But that's not him. Like, I understand him being like, oh, Joyce, I'm upset you stood me up. I'm fine
Absolutely.
With that.
Absolutely. I like that scene.
But I don't overall, I find his behavior to be too much and too over the top, and it doesn't feel like him.
Right.
And that's my problem. Because I like that he goes to the lab with her. I like his relationship with Joyce and how he feels about Joyce. I like that stuff. But I still struggle with the way they are writing him, where I feel like they're making him too over the top and too stereotypical.
Right. He's your main...
He was not written like this before.
He's like every dude in a commercial. Like a fucking idiot that needs to be told like how to do things the right way. Like every commercial I watch is that way. And I know I'm being that person again that I said I wasn't going to be, but too bad that's who I am. But yeah, it's almost like they're taking this guy and they're saying, okay, here's this interesting character with a big heart who is sort of delving into comedic oafishness.
Yes.
Correct?
It's too much. It's over the top and it doesn't need to be. We got to know Hopper for 2 seasons and we understand who Hopper is. And we know that he's like the macho man and like that's his character. And they are just leaning too hard into it. And I find it to be false. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's not fair to the character or to the actor or to his plot because it takes away from when he has good moments.
I'm also glad that one of my favorite parts about this is the way Joyce, always a good character to me, just completely and utterly doesn't apologize to this dumb, oafish man. I love that part.
I feel like you're being sarcastic. But what I like about this and about Joyce is where you're wrong to a degree, because none of us like Joyce first season. We're like, what the fuck is wrong with this lady who just sits around and cries for like 7 episodes
right.
before she finally does something?
Right.
Look at the character arc and the growth on fucking Joyce.
But we also said in the first season, we understood why that was the case. And I think Joyce's character is good. I was like, wow, she didn't even say I'm sorry. I thought that was just interesting from a character note standpoint.
Because she doesn't care. Joyce is not to be bothered with trivial things like standing some guy up for dinner. Like, do you know what I mean? Joyce has got other bigger shit going on. I love
proactive
Joyce.
So do I. But it's not either or, right? He's not some guy. He saved her life.
Right.
Right? So it's like, I don't know. But it's all good. I mean, I want to make sure the characters keep behaving like the characters that we know and don't delve into anything. That said, that stupid bullshit aside, again, I'm a podcaster. I'm going to bring my personal lens to this thing. That's just the way it's going to be. That's how entertainment is discussed. And I'll try to be as objective as possible, but I actually do really like Joyce. I like that Joyce has a mission, so to speak. I like that she is doing stuff. I like that she is... based on everything that Joyce has been through, I'm glad that Joyce is now in a position to where she goes, okay, if weird things like this happen, it's not nothing.
Right.
And I kind of feel like, shouldn't everyone feel that way in Hawkins who had to deal with the last 2 seasons? Anything weird, we should be like attuned to that and ready to investigate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Hopper would too. I don't think Hopper would just be like, some magnets fell off your fridge. Like,
especially when Elle is essentially his daughter at this point.
There's 2 seasons of crazy shit happening, which Hopper was part of.
Mm-hmm.
And now somebody he cares and trusts deeply, who faced trauma with him, is trying to communicate an issue to him and he's just not hearing it. Mm-hmm. That just seems silly to me, right?
I agree.
Now, I talked about how I like this episode overall. I like it. I think it's the best one of the season so far. And all of the good shit is still yet to come. I just need to get my gripes out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if there's anything else really that is super bothersome to me in this, but because most of that bothersome stuff I sort of covered. I'm not going to, you know, beat a dead horse. Jonathan kind of, is he super gun shy now?
Jonathan is like I don't know.
Was he always that? See, it's hard for me to remember. I haven't watched the other seasons in 3 years. So it's like 2 years. So has he always been gun shy and not wanting to get involved? I feel like he really needs to be pushed by Nancy now. Again,
Jonathan is almost like a secondary character that's only just there to like drive Nancy places at this point.
But that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, he's joined the incompetent oafish man's club to me. Like, he's just somebody who's just like, all right, I guess. And she's like, you're a warrior like your mom. He's like, I know. And they will go in the house. She's like, I don't know, Nancy. I mean, he does go with her eventually, but because what are you going to do with him? Nothing. But is it a writing device to create some sort of conflict with Nancy for more obstacles to overcome?
What, is so it, the guys at the paper being dicks?
No, I'm sorry. I'm still talking about Jonathan. Is, like, in other words, is his reluctance supposed to be something that helps us, like, recognize her struggles more because she has to overcome his reluctance? That's part of her growth now. Or is it, has Jonathan always been like this and I just don't remember it well? That's what I'm trying to remember. Like, can you remember Jonathan?
It's hard
much?
Because I feel like we had a lot of complaints about, again, I think in season one, like, the best stuff we got from Jonathan was, like, his relationship with Nancy, but it was, you know, she was
and
with
Will.
Steve and it was different. No, but we didn't see him with Will season one. Season
right,
two,
right.
Jonathan was with Will, and the
right.
best thing about Jonathan was his relationship with Will. And both of those storylines have been played out to a degree where now seeing him with Nancy, he just seems like a secondary character who's just there just to be there.
He's kind of faded.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
and look, at the end of the day, some characters are going to have to fade in favor of other characters. I'm totally aware from a writing standpoint, that's going to have to be what it is.
Right, for sure. Right? For sure.
But let's kind of talk about each of these sort of plot things and how, it's funny, they haven't quite lined up yet.
But they're starting to,
but they're
very much.
Starting to. And that's cool. Like, by the third episode, we have a lot of interesting things going on. It's funny because it almost feels like, with this episode, we have two distinct plots going on, but we know they're going to line up. We
mm-hmm.
have the stuff with Billy and then the stuff with the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, they're connected, but they do feel disparate at this point. Like
right.
they're two separate situations
mm-hmm.
going on. But because you live in Hawkins is a crazy fucking place. There's going to be crazy shit going on. We know this.
Right. No, for sure.
Right. So what do you want to talk about first? Well, what do you want to talk about next? Would be a better way to say it.
Well, we already talked about Hopper and Joyce.
More or less. We can...
Although, yeah, let's just go back and like finish talking about them and then move on to the next thing. Because I do want to comment on just Joyce in general and how I think the show has done a really good job of is showing Joyce as like a strong character.
For sure.
And someone who's willing to take initiative, but not losing sight of the traumatic shit that she's gone through. And I love how they do that.
I agree with you.
It when she walks into that building and she sees the spot where Bob dies and how that's like so jarring for her and like it she has to stop. It just feels so real to me. Everything
Absolutely.
About the way Joyce reacts to things feels so real. It doesn't feel over the top. It doesn't. And yeah, they show as a flashback scene, whatever. That's fine. Where you see Bob die, that doesn't bother me.
No, it's just a like, quick hitter.
It to me feels so. The way that she reacts and her behavior feels so real and so genuine to me without being over the top. And I feel like being like really pushy towards the audience to be like, don't, like, I don't know. She just does such a good job, honestly.
Winona Ryder's really good. I think that helps. And yeah, I agree with you. I think she is a character that we've seen, to kind of go back to what you were saying at the start, is a character who's been through crazy shit, who's somebody that was sort of stuck in a situation. She was a single mom facing the missingness, the abduction or missing child thing, and having to deal with that traumatically in a way that's very realistic. And I think, and I guess Joyce has always been handled realistically, maybe more than any character.
Yeah.
Right? She's been super grounded in having realistic responses to things. From the first season to the second season, where she starts to take more of an active role and gets stronger and in the stuff with Will and taking the initiative, and then, you know, Bob, and now being very tuned to the possible oddities that happen in and or around Hawkins as a result of this place is like a nexus, you know.
Right.
It's the Bermuda Triangle of a strange phenomenon. It's the Harlow Falls, right? It's just this weird place where weird things constantly happen. And she's
the Hellmouth.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's this place where weird things happen. And she is now very tuned to those things. But she never becomes a Marvel character.
Correct.
And I think that is my favorite part of this.
And none of these characters do except for Elle, because she is.
She always has been.
And that's, I like that too.
But that's counterbalanced very well in the season. And that's something I remember talking about last time, maybe the first episode, I don't recall, but the fear of Elle becoming a superhero that can just blow shit up.
Right.
And win, essentially. And seeing the frailty of adolescence play a very big part in who she is and how her character reacts and responds to things, I think is a very important part of her character and what makes her interesting still to me. Mm-hmm. And I am glad, you know, it was a good move to bust her and Mike up. So they could do stuff instead of just be gaga at each other all day.
Right.
It'd be funny watching this with a rewatch, knowing that that's coming. I would probably stomach the goofiness from the first episode a little bit more, you know. But all that said, it is it's interesting that the Losers Club outside of Dustin has sort of taken a back seat in this whole thing.
Yeah.
And that's who you built the show around.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty bold, but not unsurprising, right? It's not unsurprising that you have to pivot to different characters sometimes. What'd you think of the stuff with Joyce possibly moving the house on the market and in Hopper's reaction?
I actually want to say that, like, where every moment where I say, like, I hate what the writers are doing with Hopper, the reason why I hate a lot of what they're doing is because that scene is wonderful. He's so good in that with her.
He's great.
And their interactions are so great and so genuine and so real. And it's well written. And that's the Hopper that, like, I believe in, that he hears that she's trying to sell her house. And he's so worried about keeping the place safe so she can stay there. Like, that matters to him.
Yes.
And he doesn't need to talk about it or be, like, stupid and make jokes. Like, you know what I mean? He just does it.
Yes.
And I like that he talks about, like, his trauma. Or he's like, I know how you feel. Like, I almost shot a dog the other day because it freaked me out.
I'm glad he mentioned that.
I that is the Hopper that I want to see, and I feel like we've gotten to know. And I don't know why they seem so willing to, like, try and do something else with him. Like, I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Like, the Hopper we know is this character who had a boisterous way about him. He had an aloof way about him, but he was also somebody capable of expressing deep feeling kind of when it mattered. Mm-hmm. And he's always been a no-nonsense sort of competent guy,
mm-hmm.
right? We've always been like, that's the guy that's going to get shit done. Like, he's not afraid to pull out the revolver and be aggressive,
mm-hmm.
as you would imagine a small town police chief in '86 would be. Somebody not afraid to be like, here's what we need to do. Here's what I'm willing to do. He's not afraid to put himself in danger instead of really concerning himself with Elle and Mike and stuff like that. But, you know, I don't mind, you know, I think I'm a little more forgiving on him in terms of getting annoyed that Joyce stood him up. But it is what it is. But boy, does he get the shit kicked out of him in this episode.
I hate watching people get beat up. It really is hard for me.
Fucking Darth Rusky took him out.
Those punching Russians, him in the ribs, man. Evil Russians.
Beat him up real good. He had a couple good hits on the guy, but the guy took him unawares.
And Hopper is, like, really going to start going to the gym. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. He is. Ooh, he's had one too many beers in this time since he became a parent.
He's got to lay off the fucking beer and maybe have a little bit more green stuff in his life.
Do a couple crunches, Hopper. That'll help you when you're fighting the Russians, okay?
Maybe. Maybe not.
All I'm saying.
I like that we went back to... when you go back to the Hawkins lab, when you have Joyce have that flashback... You get world-building consistency, which I like. You know what I mean? I just like the consistency of that. Like,
yeah.
We have a world. We've returned to the world.
Mm-hmm.
Remember this place? Ooh, that's cool. Like, that's a good way to remind us that Hawkins is still the Hawkins we knew and that these old skeletons of our past sort of still linger and have a danger about them. I mm-hmm. like that. That's very Stephen King to me, so to speak.
Right, it's yeah,
like
a for sure.
Like Derry.
Derry Maine, yeah, exactly. Know? This is their version of that.
Do you want to talk about... Let's talk about the mall plot.
Well, can we just finish Nancy and Jonathan and be done with them? Because I want to talk about them again later.
All
is there
right.
anything else to say? The people at work making fun of Nancy is like...
Yes. It's
too
it's,
much.
It's, yeah, I've said my piece on that. But I love... The type of horror that I love
yes. mm-hmm.
is this type of horror that we experience in this moment. I think it's great. I love when she go when Jonathan and her get to the woman's house. They follow the leads. You know, they the guys make fun of her. They put the rat. They drive her. They're driving her to succeed. Right? She's motivated to prove them wrong, or at least, you know, follow up on this important shit that's going on. And when they go downstairs and they see the old woman, I forget her name,
Mrs. Driscoll.
Good name. Mrs. Driscoll.
Doesn't she sound like she's from a Stephen King novel?
She does. I had a high school teacher named Driscoll.
Mm.
But
it's an ice skating rink also.
Middle school
isn't
teacher.
Isn't Driscoll an ice skating rink?
I think so. Yeah. Middle school Driscoll.
I had a birthday party there once.
I don't know Driscoll. Oh, I do. I know ice Driscoll and rink. Driscoll and Hetland.
I don't know who Hetland is.
Hetland hockey. Hetland rink.
I don't know that rink.
The Hetland Hawks, man. Anyway, yes, it was very... It was awesome. I actually really liked that. I enjoyed the moment where they go downstairs, they look and they hear the noise. And when she turns around from eating the fertilizer, I was like, yes, this is the kind of fucking horror that I love. You're walking down there, you don't know what to expect. And when you see the nice old lady who was being very cooperative and friendly to you is down there sucking down the fertilizer like the rat before her. It does two things. Number one, it's super unsettling. Number two, it makes us go, wow, the stakes have just gone up because now it's not just rats, it's the people. So what does this mean? Is she going to explode? Is she going to turn into something weird? What does that mean?
Yeah.
We've seen the effect on the rat. Now we wonder what will be Mrs. Driscoll's fate. It's very awesome.
Yeah, it's a really, really creepy moment. It is very unsettling. So
I just want to make this clear. I like the plot surrounding Jonathan and Nancy. I just feel like Jonathan has become disinteresting to me. And I know I'm only three episodes in. I know we've got a lot of characters in this show, and maybe I'm judging it too harshly, but I don't know. I guess it's just a question of the plot's more interesting kind of than they are at this point.
I would agree.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I don't gotta, again, watch the men making jokes about Nancy. Like, we get it.
Yeah, pieces of shit.
Enough is enough.
But, yeah, I don't think that's going to end, to be honest with you, until she proves them wrong.
Well, I mean, one of them's in a tough spot right now, so.
Yeah, we'll talk about him in a minute. But anyway, let's talk about the mall.
Yeah, this is an example of the woman being competent and the men not being competent, done in a way where it's, like, really cute and really funny, and it doesn't, to me, like, feel, like, pushy with that plot line. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like Robin figuring out what everything means while they're like following the jazzercise instructor. Like,
yes.
They're good comedic relief. They're doing the same thing that a bunch of the other plot lines are doing where the woman is smart and the men are dumb. But for some reason, like the way this is done is like, I'm like, I'm fine with this. It was cute.
Right. And I think it's because it's not so over the top and dumb because I don't care if men behave stupidly if the men are stupid.
Yeah.
Right? That's fine. As long as, for me, I want your characters to act like the characters you've established for three seasons. If you've told me that for three seasons, Dustin's a moron and he's a moron, then fine. If you don't tell me that and then he is, I'm going to go, well, this is weird.
But he's not even being a moron. That's
I'm not
the thing.
Saying
yeah.
that. I'm not saying that. Let me finish. What I'm saying is he's actually giving Steve good advice. Like this conversation between Steve and Dustin is I actually like it. I feel like Steve has sort of, he's sort of entered comedic territory as well. A punchline. We did have him discover the song last week, but on this, it's interesting because I like the idea of a show like Stranger Things. The whole premise of Stranger Things at the beginning was kids going through some shit the adults just would never understand. How can the kids impart the knowledge and wisdom onto the adults to get them to help them? Because kids can only have so much control over their own lives. Right?
Mm-hmm.
We're almost seeing that in a microcosm between these two guys. And I know it sounds highfalutin, but let me try to explain. What I mean is, it's cool to see a younger kid give an older kid advice.
Yeah.
Right? It's like a reminder of thinking about life in more simple terms. I think kids think of life in more simple terms than adolescents, young adults do.
Mm-hmm.
I think it gets more complicated and more nuanced the older we get. And what I love about this scene between these two guys is that the conversation, it does matter to them. It does matter to them as people. And it's not just like we're being fucking idiots. It's a cool conversation where Dustin's trying to impart some simple wisdom onto a kid that's older than him that clearly knows how to navigate relationships with women better than Dustin does.
Which is exactly what Steve tells him, which is, you know,
it's a good scene.
Yes. And the two of them have such a good, like, timing and chemistry. They're so good together.
They really are.
Just the way they feed off each other having a conversation, it feels so real. And, like, they were great. For whatever reason, they chose to, like, pair them together, like, when they did that last season. Or even, I don't even remember if maybe season one was when it started. But they're such a good little, like duo in the season. You know what I mean? They just do well together. And, you know, they're trying to spy and do their job and do their work. And Dustin's getting mad at Steve for, like, looking at girls. But then Dustin spends all his time just trying to give him girl advice. And they follow Jazz's eyes.
I love the moment where Steve's like, and how did you get that girl? He's like, because you follow the, which is hilarious because he doesn't even have a girl. It's fake. That's the most funny part about this whole thing.
Steve's just very proud of his work.
Yeah.
Truly proud of what he's done.
Calls him pea brain, which I love.
They're very cute together. I love them. Yeah. I really do. Like, so much. And I really like Robin. She's so good. She's a great character.
She fits into the cast very well. Now, obviously, she's older than Max. So when Max came in, it was like almost like a shock. Like, whoa, what's this chick about? But Robin being a young woman brings something a little bit different to the dynamic of the group. And I find that interesting. She has like, I guess like Steve says, she's weird.
Yes.
And it comes through in the actress's performance. Like, she's an oddball. She would have been a cool chick to me in high school, right? That kind of weirdo. And that's how she is. And it's perfect for this group of fucking weirdos.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like a very natural fit. It's almost like the actress is like, I've watched the first two seasons of this show. Now I'm going to be in the third season and I get these kids. Like, it's almost like the perfect casting.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I don't know who she is.
She was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
No shit.
Yeah, she was one of the Manson girls, the girl who didn't go into the house.
Oh, cool.
When they came to the house, like in real life, obviously the character, like, you know what I mean? Like at the end, the girl who goes back to the car and
not
doesn't
the
go
sexy,
in.
Trashy one.
The one who doesn't go in.
Got it. So I do like that stuff. I like where that's going. I like, holy shit, the end of that stuff. Like, obviously the Jazzercise thing was hilarious. It's when I saw that guy, I was like, Russian. I thought he looked like a surfer, bro.
Yeah.
I was like, that guy doesn't look Russian. He looks like a surfer bro to me. Like, whoa, fucking gnarly waves today, bros. You want to go hit surfing? Let's hit it, man. Smoke a bunch of pot. Fucking ride that gnarly fucking wave, bro. Like, that's he looked exactly like that to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then he's that fucking jazzercise.
He's like, all right, ladies. Fuck those hips.
All the stores, really like Walden Books, all the stores that are now gone, like they don't exist anymore.
I like that moment when you see like Robin like look around. Like I felt that way. Like there was like a Sam Goody in one episode. And like I know there's still like Orange Julius's, but they're very different now. And seeing all that stuff is so crazy.
Yeah, they serve so many things besides like the two flavors. Orange usually used to be like, do you want pina colada, orange, or strawberry?
Yeah, now it's like attached to like Dairy Queens and malls.
Correct.
Like I love Dairy Queen. Oh my God, I would kill for Dairy Queen right now. Anyway.
But I like all this stuff. I like the code that is deciphered.
Oh, me too.
So cool.
I'm so glad. And I didn't remember exactly when they figured it out, but like I very specifically remember what the silver cat was. And obviously like blue meets yellow in the west. Like I feel like when I originally watched, I remember thinking like, okay, this is a sunset, sunrise type thing. Like that was my immediate thought. And like, I like that it wasn't. I like that it's the clock. I love the code being cracked, like that moment in it all coming together. I don't know why. I just think it was great. Like,
hey, is that supposed to be Lucas's sister getting ice cream samples?
That is Lucas's sister. Oh, yes, awesome. Yes. Because people liked her because, like, I don't know, she said like two sassy things last season and everyone's like, you know, we stan Lucas's sister. And now here she is just getting ice cream every day, just showing on up. So she did good, whatever she did.
That's awesome.
Of sassy moments talking shit to Lucas. She's now like essentially a supporting character on the show getting ice cream from Robin.
That's awesome. So yeah, I like this stuff on the roof at the end. I mean, now we have entered, you know, it's funny. You go from the mystery of the Hawkins lab and those personnel and how dangerous they could be in their vans to now like Russian scary dudes with AK-40, with fucking Kalashnikov guns all standing around like they're dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if they would like want to kill somebody or are very, In other words, you don't know what to think from them. Mm-hmm. You just know that they are very dangerous. We saw one beat the crap out of Hopper. Mm-hmm. That's before that scene, right?
No.
No.
Hopper gets... Oh, yes, maybe. I can't remember where the scene's happening, to be honest. But yeah, they're definitely dangerous people. And it's just funny, like, you know, Robin and Dustin and Steve are like trying to crack this code, and there's like this comedic part of it. And it's like, they're taking it seriously and like, you know, evil Russians and whatever, but it's also kind of like a bit of a game. Like, you know what I mean? The stakes aren't very high when they first get like obsessed with it.
It's almost
just like a fun thing for them to do. And then all of a sudden now the stakes are high.
Yes.
When they get there, you know,
you know,
it's well done.
Absolutely. You know what this reminds me of? When you're an adolescent and weird things are going on in your neighborhood, you have this sort of like way that makes you act like it's something bigger than it is for the fun of checking it out, even though deep down you know it isn't.
We used to spy on my neighbor next door.
We did that shit all the time too.
And we used to say he was like, I don't know, we would like make up all this shit about him. And we didn't even know his name. We would call him like Uncle Mark. That was like our code word for him. I don't know why. Like, and every time he was at the house, he was taking care of his older parents who lived there at the time. And I don't know if we thought he was going to like murder them and like try to steal their fortune. I mean, he still lives in the house and they're both dead. So perhaps that's what he did. But we used to spy on him fucking constantly. We'd look out the window. We'd be like, this is what he did today. He was at the house for this many hours. I don't fucking know why.
Right. That's funny.
Just a thing.
Yep. Well, it's, but deep down, you're always like, you know, that's not true.
Yeah, but maybe it was. Now that I'm thinking about it, maybe I was right.
After seeing Stranger Things, you might be. That's what I like about it, though. It's like you said, that's a good, you know, the stakes are low, but then they're high.
Yeah.
Even though they've always been high, they just didn't know it yet.
Right.
It's awesome.
Correct.
Because the assumption is... it looks like Hopper gets beat up after.
After, okay.
Yep. After the Russians and the guns.
I thought so.
That kind of makes sense from a revelation standpoint. You show that they're dangerous, and then you show one beat up Hopper, I mean, pretty handily, and we know Hopper can take care of himself.
Even though he has let himself go a little.
Yeah, yeah. He has to be oafish and comedic.
Poor Joyce. Like, she has a lot of tragedies with men, like, having horrible things happen to them in this building.
Yeah, no shit. This ain't going to make her want to ever come back again.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Poor Joyce.
Oh, God.
But she got a look at the motorcycle. So,
hope she wrote down a license plate
number. I don't think she could see it, but I do like the idea of a motorcycle. You know, the show has always been very good at having clues return.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if, like, there'll be a motorcycle and she'll be like, wait, there's a motorcycle, and it'll trigger a memory later in the season.
Right, right, right.
But that's kind of cool. I guess we should probably, we should talk about the dumb farting adolescent boys.
There is stuff to say just because of the dynamic with Will.
Yep. Yeah.
I was almost like, no, let's just skip them. But no, I like the stuff with Will because it's like very real and relatable, and it's like really sad. But it's so very true about growing up,
sure.
I think.
Yep.
And growing up at different, you know, everyone grows up differently and changes at different times and mm-hmm. becomes interested in different things. That's why most people still aren't best friends with the people they were friends with in elementary school or junior high or high school or any of it.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, you may have the few. Yeah. But it tends to be the people you're the closest with or the people who you still are doing similar things with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not friends with anybody I went to high school with or before. Not one person that I still talk to, because that's how it happens. You know, you just, you change, you check in on them on Facebook and that's all you do.
Is that the, what the hell is it? Is it, I don't know. Is it high fidelity where it's like, it's not what you're like, it's what you like. It's just
that sounds like something that I would say in High Fidelity,
yeah.
Which is a great movie.
It's a great quote because it's kind of what you're saying. It's not like what kind of person you are, it's what you're into. And that's always what brings people closer together, like similar interests, et cetera.
No, it's true. And
especially at those younger ages, you know?
Yeah. And even through adulthood, and you find this, like, you know, I have friends from different parts of my life, and the friends that I tend to spend the most time with are the people that I work with, because we have a thing in common, which is that we go to the same place every day and like are very interested in the same type of things. Like, so you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Those tend to be the people I spend more time with. Partially out of like convenience too, I'm sure, but just because of that, hey, we do similar things.
Right.
We have this thing in common.
Right.
As opposed to like somebody who, you know, is into something totally different and does something totally different. Like, you don't have that same like commonality to like be like, let's talk about this thing or do this thing.
And it goes back to what you were saying, that people sort of grow up at different speeds and at different ages. Mm-hmm. And there is this real thing about this episode. The really true piece of this is this idea of when you're a young person, you like certain things. When you start hanging out with other people, sometimes you adopt the things that they like.
Yes.
But you don't really like those things, or you kind of do only in that moment. In other words, like for Will, like Will's probably gonna be playing D&D at like conventions when he's my age. You see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, he'll be going to the gaming store, okay, yeah, and painting his models.
So
you'd hang out with Will.
I might, but he is kind of being a little bit.
I don't think you'd hang out with Mike.
Mike's boring. Will is less boring, but Will is getting a little too whiny. Well, just a little bit.
I feel for Will in this episode.
I do too. Take your dumb robe off. Take your hat off. Be normal.
Yeah, okay? That was a little too much.
I'm just teasing. But my point is this. It's, you know, people's interests start to get pulled in many different directions. You know, sometimes it's like, oh, we want to do this now, but he still wants to do this. He doesn't want to let go of that thing that brought him comfort. Mm-hmm. And that's the underlying part of this. And, you know, we can bust Will's balls a little for maybe being a little bit of a bitch. But one thing we did say leading up to this episode was this idea that Will is just trying to scratch out a piece of normal because he hasn't had it since the show started.
Exactly.
And normal to him is feeling the safety and comfort and the control. That's a big one. Of hanging out with your friends and playing a game.
Mm-hmm.
It's a controlled, safe place. And you're having a good time, and it's kind of, it has a social element, and it's something that is in his mind I think the show opens with those guys playing D&D, and that's the most comfort, yes, Will ever felt. And then he's ripped away.
Right.
And that's it. And now
that's
he's
the only normal moment we've ever seen of Will's life.
Correct.
Playing this game with these people.
And which makes complete sense, him trying to return to that, to have a semblance of normalcy in his life again.
Whereas the rest of them have already gotten past that point and moved on, and he hasn't had a chance to.
Correct. And yes, because that's what we've seen. And yes, to your point, people mature at different speeds. They mature differently. That's just life, sadly. Not sadly, but you know what I'm saying.
But it's just like, he's like, oh, you know, Mike says, oh, you never thought we were going to get girlfriends. Like, don't be mad just because you don't like girls. And it's not, I don't think it's like a gay comment. It's mm-hmm. literally like, Will's not interested in girls.
He's not there.
He's
yet.
Not at that point. And that is, you know, I'm sure we all remember being in junior high and high school and the people who were dating at certain points, and you'd be like, holy shit, I can't believe people are dating and like making out and stuff. And mm-hmm. I'm like, I've never even kissed a boy on the mouth. You know, people yeah. would like be talking about like making out, and I'd be like, oh my God.
Only his pecker. Only kissed his pecker.
I don't know why you're saying this, but it's concerning to me.
Yeah, I heard about you. I heard about you back in them days. It's all over the bathroom walls.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, different maturity levels. But you still care about people.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I find that they also do in this episode, is they go through all of this to show, like, how different they all are and what different spots in their life. But when Will is like, it's back, like, you know that they're all like, okay.
I wrote that down. So Will has a sense about him for this stuff, huh?
Yeah, it's because the thing was inside him, I think. I don't know if it's like residually there'll always be that little bit of connection to the Upside Down because of what happened to him, maybe. I don't know.
Mm, yeah. So I thought about that, and I thought, this is something. Is there going to be one or two more seasons of the show?
I think just one.
Okay. So I guess,
but I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking of something else.
So maybe they could do something with that. Maybe he could, but it's almost like you already have 111. Do you need another one?
But what him and Al do is a little different, I think.
100%. But I mean, yeah, could you develop that into more of a thing, more of a sense about him? Or is it just going to be this, that he's, quote, touched by the Upside Down and he can sense oddities
mm-hmm.
barely?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Elle was more manufactured in the lab, right?
Yeah, so she can do a lot of shit.
Right, whereas he's more affected by what happened to him, traumatized.
Right.
In a supernatural way, so to speak.
Right.
But yeah, I think Will destroying his fort is a moment of, I think that's supposed to be some sort of catharsis. And I think it's supposed to be that Will, like Will's meltdown in his clubhouse and then destroying the clubhouse, I think is sort of a part of him that is trying to make him see the reality of the way life works. It's almost like a defense mechanism to where he gets mad at this shit that he desperately loves, and he's gonna sort of, you kind of have to kill your darlings to grow up a little. And maybe it's the kind of thing where he does this and he puts that shit behind him, and he does want to embrace stuff a little bit different, and he's like, fuck the games for now, fuck whatever for now, no more D&D, whatever it's going to be, let's do this thing. And then he sort of overcomes it and then comes back to it. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I wonder if at the end of season three, we'll see these guys playing a game. That would be kind of cool to me, but I'm curious. I do like that moment with him. It's very real.
Yeah. For sure.
Good stuff out of Will.
Yeah.
Much more interesting. And it sucks because I feel like Lucas is caught in the gravity well of Mike's boringness. Because
I know, you want to love Lucas so much, but Lucas is boring too.
I know, because he's caught in the... Because Mike needs somebody to talk to when he's wallowing.
They're just both boring and wallowing.
Right. But I mean, Mike is your main fucking guy.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're not going to like make Mike wallow. Mike needs somebody to talk to, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I guess they were hoping more out of that pair off, but they're just not doing anything.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
That's going to be the truth.
Well, why bury the lead? Too late. We already did. Let's talk about Elle. Let's talk about Max and this eventual lead up to this final scene of the episode.
It's an interesting example I like that this starts with them, like, again, hanging out. So glad they're buddies. They're going to go do fun shit. Like, they go listen in.
Fucking Ralph Macchio.
Yeah, Elle goes and listens in on the guys. And Max is all like, oh, my God, you can do this. This is so cool. So they're basically playing their version of spin the bottle. But it's, you know, let's go and listen on people. And that's what brings them into this situation.
It's great.
With
it's,
Billy.
It's such a...
They were just trying to have fun. And now they're caught up in it.
It's such a natural way... You always wonder with shows like this, like, how are we going to get our different groups involved in this in a way that's realistic and has some artistry in it, and not just slam them all together because this threat looms over all of Hawkins and they must all band together like the fucking Avengers. Mm-hmm. We want something a little bit more subtle and realistic to these characters. And what a perfect, in my opinion, what perfect timing, what a perfect setup. These girls just want to have fun shopping at the mall.
No pun intended. These girls just want to have fun.
Doing their thing. Nice one. And then bam, their fun leads them into this.
Yeah, I think it's great.
It's great. It's really well written. All of the stuff with Max and Eleven this week, I think, was fucking great. And it was so good and done so well. That's why I was high and still am on this episode. Is mostly from that and then the mall stuff mostly.
Yeah. I agree. I think it's great. I think the stuff and the fact that it's Billy and, you know, it's Max's brother and her original like unwillingness to believe that it's something really bad. And you watch her slowly come to terms with the fact that it might be really bad.
Absolutely. But you know what I do love about it? When they do listen in on the boys, I think that's the first time ever we've seen Elle in that state of clairvoyance where she's doing something utterly mundane. Right? Every time it's always been like, what does this mean?
Like, I have to do it, yeah.
What's this investigation?
And this is different, like, yeah.
Goofy shit.
She's doing it for fun.
She is. And I actually kind of like that.
Me too. I like her using her powers for things that you would imagine a girl that age when she's like, hold on a second, I have these powers. Oh, that girl talks shit to me. Let me make her soda blow up in her face.
Totally.
You know?
Totally.
I think that that's realistic.
Yes.
Which I like.
Yep. The moment where she and Billy face off.
When they see, Billy, yes. like see her, oh, it's great.
And you see her image sort of shimmer in the warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I like her reaction. She knows that something is wrong here.
Because normally that's not how it works.
And that was the pre-credit sequence. That was amazing.
Yeah.
A great hook.
Mm-hmm. For sure. It definitely was.
And then they decide, sometimes when Billy's with girls, they scream. But like a good scream.
I was like, oh, what?
What? By the way, you know what I respect about Billy? He's a pure pig. You know, penthouse and hustler, no playboy. Right to dick and puss images. He ain't fucking around with that light.
Is that the difference?
Shit. Oh yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yes. Playboy's more like just nude women. It you know, airbrushed.
And what? And Hustlers like got like
basically it's just porn? Still of porn, more or less.
Oh. Ew. Yeah. That's weird.
Yep. But ew, you said.
It's just weird.
But them investigating his place, I love it. I love that now they're hot on the trail.
Mm-hmm.
The ice in the mundane explanations, like, oh, it was probably for his muscles. Totally.
No, and that's the thing. And you watch Max go from like, oh, it's not a big deal. It's probably this. This probably happened because of this. And you just watch her slowly come to the realization like, oh, shit, like something's wrong.
I sometimes wonder if Max and or even Billy have had to make excuses for each other in the face of their stepfather before, you know?
Yeah, definitely. But I'm sure.
Right? It seems like she was ready to make a bunch of excuses for him. Right
even away. Though she knows that Billy's a dick. Like, you know, we know that Max knows that Billy's not a great person.
Absolutely.
So.
But it continues. You know, their investigation leads them to the lifeguard place. Obviously, they're totally useless. And that's when they grab the thing and they're like, all right, we're just going to go to this bitch's house.
Yeah.
We're going to her house.
Right.
But first, we're going to go to these amazing public showers for 1986, by the way. Nice. Not a lot of privacy in 86. probably not.
Ooh.
Probably more of a gay shower in 86, though.
Whoa.
But the visual stuff of her searching, the red door, seeing the red door, mm-hmm. and then when they get to the house, there's a red door in the house.
Yeah, like she's trying to find her, and you just see how she does it, and it's so... It is cool the way that it looks and her scene like watching.
Oh my God.
God, what the fuck is the name of this girl? I already forgot her name.
Which one?
The girl, the lifeguard.
I don't know.
I don't know her name is either. That's unfortunate.
But it's the shit with her getting sucked down mm-hmm. and disappearing into the darkness. That is so visually compelling. There's a lot of great visual elements in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really well done. Very well paced.
Yes, I agree.
Right? But obviously they continue their investigation. Meanwhile, you got all the other shit going on. But when they get to the house,
mm-hmm.
I love the rain. I love the red and the yellow fucking raincoats. I love that Elle standing on the pegs of the bike. Classic 80s shit. And like I said, the way the door opens and you see it's red, it's subtle. Like they're not looking at a red door, but when the door opens, you see it's red.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that great reveal of the newspaper guy being the dad.
Yeah.
Like, awesome. Oh,
there is a reason why that dick's in the show.
Yes. It's so good. But this is just too good not to have a... Let's play a clip. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Fucking Billy. He's so all cleaned
funny.
Up.
He's so funny.
Max.
His voice.
We didn't mean to barge in. We tried to knock, but maybe you didn't hear us over the storm.
I'm sorry. Who is this dripping all over my living room right now?
I'm sorry. Janet, Tom, this
is my sister Maxine.
He's so different.
What on earth are you doing here?
Is something wrong?
Calling her Max.
And look how he's dressed. Okay. With fucking button down.
Yeah, he doesn't look like himself at all.
Powder
Where
blue.
Is she?
Where is she?
I'm sorry. Where is who?
Well, they're a little.
I love it. I love shit like this. And that reveal of her walking in.
It's like totally fine.
This is my favorite shit. I have said this countless times across many LSD podcasts. I'm going to say it again. I love the hiding in plain sight.
Mm-hmm.
I love that shit. I love Cylons. I love changelings.
Yep.
I love possessed people
mm-hmm.
that are standing there and you know you're looking at your sister, your brother, your father, your lover, whatever, but it's just not them.
Mm-hmm.
I love that kind of shit. Because it's such a great way to build tension.
Right.
Because you don't know what's going to happen at any second. This scene is one of the best scenes in the show. It's so fucking good.
I was going to say, I'm glad that you said that because this is a great scene of television in general. It's so well done. It's brilliant.
Yes.
It's perfectly like executed. Like I love it. It's the best moment in the show, like this season to date.
No question.
Is this moment.
And it's a top scene in all of the shows.
It's a great scene in general, just for TV. It's great. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's awesome. And watching his eyes dilate, getting the feelings of her. And then
how powerful she is
and him be knowing, getting the insight because of his connection.
Mm-hmm. in the moment at the table is great. I love that shit. I love the, here's my cookies. And they're like, do you want one, to the girls? And the girls are both like, no.
Right.
And even the moment the wife, like, she spills the wine glass and immediately is like, oh, too much wine. And you just, it's so good the way it's like something's really, really off. The way she gets up and she's like, I'm just going to lie down. And she's literally spilled the wine glass. It's all still on the table. There's no move to like clean it or whatever. Like, she's so immediately out of sorts. It's fantastic. And then her like hitting the floor in the other room and him getting up like after her. Like, and you're like, okay, this is bad news.
And the setup, right? The setup is the girls ride away in their bikes. Billy gives him the 1,000-yard stare from the window with his pupils being weird. And then whenever we cut back into the house, the tension goes up higher.
Correct.
Because now we go, fuck, we're still in this scene, right? We haven't left this scene.
Because that's the normal move at that point, is to cut away from this scene.
Correct.
Billy stares at them while they leave, and you're like, okay, that's how the scene ends.
Yes.
Like, it's almost unexpected for them to come back to it and continue it.
Yes.
And you're right about the tension. It's great.
Absolutely. When the enemy is sitting at the dinner table with you, the tension is very high. You know, this is something Tarantino is a master of. Putting people together, and then there's dialogue, and you know shit's about to get weird here, right? Building, you know, there's a lot of tension built here just in the performance. The shots lingering. The daughter looks so, she looks like she has been getting victimized by a vampire for like 3 nights.
Yeah.
She's like got a vacant look about her. She looks pale. She looks weird. And Billy couldn't look any cleaner.
Right. And the way they move through the scene as she passes out without any thought, like a girl picking up the wine bottle, Billy like getting his stuff on his thing, like totally calm. He's like,
yes,
gets ready, puts his little fork down. Like it's so good.
It's amazing. And it's utterly without passion. And that's what's creepy about it. Great scene. Standout moment. Covers the guy's face. And they just have blank expressions, with the exception of Billy, who sort of cracks this wry grin as "Bye Bye Miss American Pie" plays. Yeah,
the music
us out.
Is also it's great. Perfect. I love that too. We're watching something very disturbing and fucked up, and they're playing like this American classic,
right? And the point the bye bye Miss American Pie, the whole thing is like the idea of this Americana, and that's like this whole scene is set up as this crazy irony,
right?
And the kids just go bonkers, and
right, for sure,
take out the adults. Great scene.
Yeah. It really is. It was fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I think that pretty much covers everything I wanted to say this week. That is a standout moment. I mean, outside of the oafish dumb men stuff, like I said, I really enjoyed this week's episode. The Max and L stuff was fucking great. Followed up by I guess a distant second with the mall stuff.
Yeah.
Max and L. And then the scene with Billy and the family at the end was just too good.
Yeah, it was great. It was fantastic.
Too good. And again, my favorite kind of shit is that people are possessed, or people have unknown allegiances, or they've been corrupted by an outside influence, and we don't know who they are or what they're, we don't know their motivation. That's the other thing. They're acting so alien. That stuff is so cool to me. And I'm really happy that that's the direction we seem to be going. And when we saw Billy take the girl in the trunk, I was like, ooh, we're going to get a thing where people get like fucked up. And, you know, it's awesome. I just, that stuff speaks to me from a horror perspective.
Right.
And there were some good horror moments in this, in the last scene, the scene with Mrs. Driscoll in the basement. Perfect. Good stuff. I really enjoyed this week's episode, Jessica. And it's reinvigorated my love of Stranger Things.
I'm so happy to hear that.
Awesome. Well, do you have any closing things you want to say before we get out of here?
I think we covered it all.
I think we did too. All right. Well, thank you guys very much for tuning in. And we will see you in at maximum another week's time. So I hope you enjoy this episode, and we'll catch you on the flip. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you very much for tuning in to another edition of the Hawkins Report, a Stranger Things podcast by LSG Media. Don't forget to visit us on the web at LibertyStreetGeek.net. That's LibertyStreetGeek.net.